The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
I'd like to welcome all of you to this program. I'm Gary Knoll. More than 53% of the people listening right now are listening around the world, outside of the United States. Later today, posted on Progressive Radio Network, will be something that is rather startling. When you type in on Google, conservative radio, as of this morning, you get about 41 million people. Type in liberal radio, you get about 51 million. Then if you type in Democracy Now!, about 8 million. Howard Stern, 8 million. NPR, around 23 million. CNN, ABC, CBS, ABC, BBC Radio. Fox Radio, you get anywhere from 2 million to about 12 million. Liberty Radio, you get about 25 million. Green Tea Radio, Green Tea Party Radio, or excuse me, the Tea Party Radio, you get about 30 million. Progressive Radio, 91 million. Let me just put that in perspective. 7 years ago, when I started Progressive Radio Network, we had 24 people listening to the first show. And I never will forget it because the engineer was showing me how many people it was on a computer screen from me when I was doing the show. And one of my buddies was sitting outside and was watching it, and I came out. He said, quote, "Gary, you ought to euphonize this." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, no one's listening." I said, "Not today." I said, "How many people do you think are tired of aligning themselves with rigid ideologies on the left or the right, but they don't fit, but they have no other place to listen or to go to? If you're a broadcaster, you have no choice. You have to align yourself because there's no other options." I said, "Do you know how many times while I was on ABC Network, I was listening to the Bob Grants and other people who were so radicalized in their inhumanity? But there was no other place to be, so I had my own show, and I didn't pay attention to the rest. Same is true on non-commercial radio. So I said, be patient, because in time, more people will one day wake up and become independent from being independent and making their own judgments, not having them made for them, doing their own thinking, not having others think for them. They will realize the power of an independent mind that then seeks solutions that on a spiritual level are inclusive of all needs." I said, "As long as you realize that when you're finding solutions, don't exclude people from benefiting from those solutions. Right now, it's only benefiting those who are aligned with you. And that's why we have the Democrats that claim that they are for the union, for the workers, for the poor, yet all their policies are just the opposite. Conservatives say they're Jeffersonian conservatives. No, you're not. There's no conservative on the planet that had the integrity and the understanding of Thomas Jefferson. And yet they say they're for smaller government, and they do more to increase government and the handouts to the major corporations, at the same time taking what scraps they give to the middle class, working class, and the poor off the table. So there's contradictions. There's such confusion. But now there's also options. So now 91 million people, who would have thought, are now looking for medium and individuals who are more in a line, without compromising, with a more universal, progressive spiritual value. So I want to thank those 91 million people. Who would have believed it? But it's a fact, and it's there, and the world can verify it for themselves. My guest today is on hold right now. He is Mike Adams. He is one of those independent thinking people who believes that the American public and our body politic have betrayed us because they have allowed the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, to virtually do everything in its power to control the nutrients we take, what we can say and can't say about the healing benefits of foods, and we're going to hear the rest of his argument. After him, we will have a commentary on reading the world in a loaf of bread. You didn't know a loaf of bread could tell you about the world? Oh, yes. I'll tell you about the soaring food prices, the wild weather, the upheavals, and a planet full of trouble. Then, you heard Rupert Murdoch say yesterday that he was out of the loop, didn't know about this internet spying. Well, how about Operation Echelon, the global illegal eavesdropping scheme that dwarfs anything that Murdoch's News of the World could even think of, and yet the United States and Britain are engaged in it and have been for a long time. Why haven't we heard any of this exposed on the left or right? We will today, and finally, time permitting, 1 million dead Iraqi civilians. 6 reasons the media hide this information, the true human toll of war, and why we let them, by John Turman of Alternet. I'm Gary Noll. Let's say hello now to Mike Adams. He is perhaps one of the most important voices of his generation in engaging the public in looking for the truth in what causes disease and, more importantly, how to heal themselves. Earlier, he was immersed in the common mindset of most Americans, living a high-powered life under extreme stress and depression, and at the age of 30 was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. After and only after embracing alternative medicine and a healthy lifestyle, he cured himself in several months and hence devoted his life to body-mind natural health and researching the underlying cause of disease. He is the founder of naturalnews.com. He's written over 1,600 articles in health and critiques about modern medicine under the title The Health Ranger. He hosts the Natural Living or the Natural News Hour on Progressive Radio Network with an enormous audience every Saturday at 6 p.m. Nice to have you with us today, Mike.
Hello, Dr. Noll. It's great to be with you again. Thanks for having me back on.
Just call me Gary.
I will.
I'm too young to be a doctor.
Acknowledge you formally at the beginning here.
Mike, I'm going to turn this over to you by asking you just 3 questions, all right? And then just let it roll. First, we have been led to believe the Food and Drug Administration is there to protect our interests, to protect us from dangers in medications or food supply. What is the truth of its role as a protector of our health and well-being? Secondly, we've been led to believe that the drugs currently given to us, whether it's vaccines, which they promote, or medications, or statin drugs, or Vioxx, are needed, have been proven safe and effective, or they wouldn't have received FDA approval. Tell us the truth about that. And lastly, the FDA is now engaged in an effort to virtually destroy all freedom of choice in taking supplements. They want to roll back the DeShays Amendment. They're now, and the New York Times, not surprising the New York Times, would be finding Orrin Hatch a target to attack because he supports freedom of choice and supports the health movement out in Utah, which is one of the largest health movements in America is in Utah. So they're targeting him and trying to roll back all of our freedoms so we would virtually be no better than Europe. And as you know, on April 1st of this year, Europe ceased to be free to take supplements or herbs that have been in common use for hundreds of years, herbs that everybody could use. Now they can't. They've been listed as unapproved by Codex. The FDA wants to harmonize Codex's rules with ours so that you can't get vitamin C or any other. You couldn't get anything, nor could you hear anyone say that anything could cure anything. Tell us what you know from your research about the FDA's current attempts to destroy our freedom of choice, which is going on right now as we speak. The forum is yours.
Okay, yes. three big issues all intertwined. July 1st, the FDA did announce a new effort, and I'll talk about this last, but this effort is an effort to essentially put much of the dietary supplements industry completely out of business in the United States by mandating just a burdensome and completely illegal new approvals for all dietary supplement ingredients introduced after 1994. So we'll get to that. We'll get to the details of that. But they are on the war path, it seems, against the dietary supplements industry. But let me start with your first question. Is the FDA really out there to protect our interests? And I'm glad that you led off this show with the idea of not being a gullible victim of the left or right paradigm, because both of those positions really have much the same agenda, which is to take away our choice to mandate to us what types of medicine we should have, what kinds of ideas are acceptable, how we should run our economic lives and economic decisions. And both parties really don't fit the kind of people who have what I call the common sense, liberty-oriented approach to saying, hey, we are adults. We should have the right to make our own decisions in our own lives about the things that we put into our bodies, especially, and that we should also be responsible individuals and not have government mommies and daddies telling us what to do at every corner. So I just want to thank you for putting that position out there, and it's a position that I am completely aligned with. I'm progressive in many ways. I'm conservative in some economic ways, but mostly I'm independent in thinking that the people should have the freedom to make their own choices on things like everything from raw milk to growing farmers being able to grow industrial hemp and make hemp seeds and hemp clothing and all those kinds of things that we used to have in this country. So anyway, I didn't mean to get too far off track. But getting to the FDA, it's very clear from looking at the FDA's behavior over the last couple of decades, but especially in the last 10 years, that the FDA has no motivation to protect consumers. It is a what I call a rogue agency that is really clearly in bed with the drug companies, the biotech industry, the medical device manufacturers. And we have this revolving door of executives that go back and forth between the FDA and the drug industry. We also see this with the CDC, by the way. We saw Julie Gerberding was the head of the CDC, promoted the H5N1 swine flu issue. Now she's head of Merck's global vaccine division. So we know that when government employees or executives in the FDA, they know that when they do a good job promoting pharmaceuticals and promoting vaccines, that they're going to have a nice income waiting for them in the pharmaceutical industry if they just make sure they make enough money for these companies in the meantime. So I think today, given the evidence that's out there, given the behavior that's on the record, that is publicly admitted, that only a child mind type of only a child mentality, I should say, would believe naively that the FDA is here to serve our best interest as people. It is so obvious that the FDA has surrendered its agenda over to industry. So I could give you so many examples of that, but I'm going to move on to your point number two here. Your question was, are drugs needed? Have they been proven safe, as the FDA says? Do we really have the gold standard of scientifically proven medicine, evidence-based medicine, they say? All of these cholesterol drugs and blood pressure drugs and diabetes drugs, they've all been proven safe and effective, right? Well, wrong. Much of the research, as much as 80%, based on the research that we're conducting out there, as much as 80% of the clinical trials are distorted or fabricated to produce results that are favorable to the drug companies. Results that specifically eliminate evidence of harm, They will take clinical trials, groups of people, 20 to 200 people, and they will give them all a drug. And people who start to show serious signs of side effects from the drug will then be dropped from the trial, dropped from the final results for reasons that are fabricated. So that by the time the trial is done, the drug looks like it hasn't harmed anyone or the side effects are minimal. Why? Because the people who, sometimes the people who are actually dead have been dropped from the trial, so their results don't show up. That is not science, as your listeners are well aware. That is selective science, and that's not scientific. If you cherry pick the results you want to get the outcome you want, to sell the drugs you want, to make the money you want, that is an insult to science. Real science would include all the results, and this is true with supplements, with plants, with herbs, as well as synthetic chemicals. The scientific approach must be equal. It must be honest and ethical across the board for it to have any kind of credibility. And in the drug industry today, we see an abandonment of science. It has become a joke of science. It has become an intellectual, circle-the-wagons, circular logic kind of system. So, and again, we could cite many, many examples of this, and some are even printed up in some medical journals. I mean, even when they start to look at their own evidence, they have to openly admit that it's not scientific either. Now, there might be a few exceptions where there's good science being done by a few smaller drug companies, but by and large, it's distorted in order to achieve a particular outcome. Now, to your third point, the FDA's efforts to destroy Duchenne, to destroy our access to honest nutritional supplements, this effort, this is, I call it the end game of the FDA. The FDA has decided to enforce a little-known provision of Duchenne that was introduced in 1994, a provision that required nutritional supplement companies to notify the FDA anytime they use a new ingredient. This was a notification, as in, hey, FDA, we're introducing a new nutrient, and here's a little bit about it. Here's where it comes from. Here are the chemical properties of the nutrient. Here's why we believe it's safe, and so on. And just keep this on file there at the FDA. This is notification. The FDA has now decided, all of a sudden, that this notification process will now be used as a drug or a nutrient approval process. And it is now asking every dietary ingredient or every dietary supplement company in America to go back retroactively 17 years and reapply for new approval for every dietary ingredient that has been introduced since 1994. And you must fill out all of these forms. You must do all of this research. You have to submit it to the FDA, and the FDA can deny it. They can say, we don't agree with you. We don't think it's safe. And they can deny that based on grounds such as the dose. If you have vitamin C, you now have to apply for approval if you alter the dose of vitamin C. Maybe you're offering 2,000 milligrams or even 10,000 milligrams per serving. The FDA says that is now a new alteration of vitamin C, and you have to reapply for a new approval of that dosage for your product. And here's the real kicker, Gary. Here's the real part of this that just blows my mind. Even if your company is approved for vitamin C under these new requirements, all the other companies that use vitamin C are not automatically approved for vitamin C. They have to independently apply for their own approvals for the same exact substance. So now you have thousands of dietary supplement products, or tens of thousands, being sold by hundreds or thousands of companies across the country that each individually must now reapply to the FDA, or apply for the first time, actually, for each individual ingredient and wait for approval. And during this period of waiting for approval, you cannot sell your products in America. If you do, you can be accused by the FDA of selling, quote, adulterated products. Adulterated. Even though they're not adulterated, the use of that term by the FDA is deceptive, but they can claim it's adulterated. And in the past, the historical record has shown that when the FDA claims a product is adulterated, they can then call in the U.S. Marshals, and they can conduct literally an armed raid on your manufacturing facility, on your fulfillment facility, on your company headquarters, and they can come in with guns, and they have done this many times, and they can confiscate all your products. They can take your customer records. They can confiscate all your computers, all your marketing materials, and basically charge you with criminal conduct and put you out of business for the crime of not having the FDA's approval for an ingredient that you've been selling for 17 years with no harmful effects, with no consumer complaints, with no fatalities or any kind of danger to that ingredient, because most of these ingredients are really plant-based natural substances anyway. So that is what we are facing today. It is astonishing. It's astonishing that we are now under this potential, and yet the mainstream media, or what I call the old media, has not covered this issue. It's as if it's not even happening. Only independent media like yours, like Progressive Radio Network, like what we do at Natural News, only independent media is focusing on this issue and raising the alarm that we are about to have our nutritional supplements taken away from us in America, the same way they have just been taken away from consumers across the EU. It is real, folks. It is happening. And we could end up in a few months with health food stores stripped bare of these supplements if we don't stand up now and resist what I call this FDA tyranny against our health freedoms. So that's a summary of the situation, Gary.
I appreciate those insights. Now give us a few examples of how draconian the FDA is in its approach to not allowing even natural foods such as walnuts or cherries to have any health claims made about buying a cherry, consuming a cherry from your supermarket or vendor stand, with the idea you're doing it because you were told that it helped you on some level. Explain this.
Well, this is incredible. Most Americans believe that we have a First Amendment right, freedom of speech. They think it's protected. Well, in the dietary supplements industry, it is absolutely not protected. In fact, it is outlawed in many contexts. And specifically, if a nutritional supplement manufacturer offers a product such as walnuts or almonds or cherries or green tea, and the list goes on and on, if they offer those products, and if they, in conjunction with marketing those products, if they make truthful statements, and this is the key, they are truthful statements that are scientifically supported through peer-reviewed published research. For example, saying that walnuts can't, or pecans or certain types of nuts can help reduce the risk of heart disease. It's well supported by the science. It's backed up. It's even backed up by government-funded studies, by the way, that if you make that statement, the FDA can now say your walnuts are no longer walnuts. They are now drugs, and they are unapproved drugs because you've never been granted approval to market these drugs as a treatment for heart disease. Then they can come in and confiscate all your walnuts, and they can do the same thing we talked about earlier. Armed raids with the U.S. Marshals, confiscating your products, shutting you down. And they have done this multiple times. We've documented it. There's a history of FDA raids, and it's continuing today. There have been raids conducted in the last year. But it's not just walnuts. It's every plant-based product. You could sell vitamin C and make a claim that vitamin C prevents scurvy, which everyone knows is true. Everyone knows it's scientifically backed up. It's been known for hundreds of years. And the FDA could say your vitamin C is now a drug. You are now in violation of the FDA regulations. You are a criminal. And we've even seen cases where the FDA has taken people who sold products that were cancer treatments, topical anti-cancer botanicals, for example, and the FDA would put these people on Interpol. They would actually, through the Justice Department put their names on Interpol as wanted international fugitives, and they would list their crimes as, quote, drug-related crimes. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. I think some of your listeners may not even believe what I'm saying, so I encourage you. You can read these articles on Natural News, or you can Google the searches. You can verify everything I'm saying here, is my point. It's just that a lot of this goes on underneath the radar. It doesn't get a lot of mainstream press coverage for some reason. And again, it's only in the alternative media that you seem to be learning about these threats to our health and what is essentially an FDA-enforced restriction of scientifically validated, truthful, free speech on nutritional supplements. And that's a violation of,
Mike,
of our rights.
I have a little simpler word for it. It's called fascism.
Yes.
Yeah, and
exactly
the FDA is a fascist organization under a fascist government, and they get away with it. Now, what are you suggesting that the people in this audience do to start to push back against the FDA?
My strategy has shifted on this recently, Gary, and allow me to explain why. In the past, I've always said, look, call your Congress people, representatives, sign the online petitions, speak out in your media, you know, raise your voice as much as you can. It seems that is marginally effective, and I'm not against that. However, the FDA has stepped up its game. In many ways, the U.S. government today has decided it's not going to listen to the people. Forget the people. It's going to do whatever it wants. We see this reflected in the TSA with the improper pat-downs at the airport. We see this represented in some small-town city councils that are trying to censor their own citizens locally. We see government today, frustratingly, believing that it rules over the people instead of serves the people. I feel like the FDA has decided that it's not even going to pretend to perform a mission on behalf of the people anymore. That false mask has been thrown away, and now the FDA says we are just boldly and blatantly going to push drugs and vaccines and destroy dietary supplements. So I don't know that petitioning and calling your members of Congress is enough. I almost feel like we have to reach a point somehow where there are public marches on the FDA offices in Washington. But again, the public isn't informed enough yet, partially because the mainstream media won't cover these issues. So they're not properly incensed about the issue. But I think there will come a day, Gary, there will come a day when the masses across America realize just how badly their rights are being taken away and they are being harmed by this agency. And I would like to see a peaceful but committed march on the FDA in Washington. I'm against violence. So I'm not saying, you know, bring your
gun. I understand. Civil disobedience.
Yeah. Exactly.
I agree. Mike Adams, we will do that. We will do more programs on that because the FDA has in mind the destruction of all of our rights to take any vitamins, close down the entire business, and you realize how many Americans who are healthy now, improving now, able to control their cholesterol, their blood pressure, cancer from not returning, helping themselves with dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, arthritis. These people would then relapse without these supplements. So for those of us who are healthy, it wouldn't impact us at all. But for those who are sick, which is 75% of the American population, it would be devastating. And remember, 79% of the American population take supplements on a daily basis and are open to alternative therapies. So we have to awaken the gigantic American consciousness, and that will take a little effort. We're moving full force to do this, and I know you and all of the people who work with you over at Natural News are doing this on a daily basis. So thank you, Mike, for all you're doing on this.
Well, likewise, thank you for your effort. And you have hit on a big issue there, which is the economic impact of if you take away all of these dietary supplements. Are we doing okay on time? Can I?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were closing out a segment. But look, if the FDA succeeds in this, and all these people that you mentioned with these degenerative conditions, if they lose access to their supplements, we are going to see a wave of new patients showing up and needing some kind of treatment in the conventional medical system, which is going to further bankrupt the nation, which is going to further burden Obama's health care reform system. It's going to put increasing pressure on hospitals and medical staff who are already in short supply across the country. But the bottom line is that those systems don't even work to prevent degenerative disease anyway. So instead of having people who are kept healthy through green tea extracts and pomegranate extracts and healthy oils and things like that, you're going to have people who are now put on all of these pharmaceuticals that then create a cascading wave of new symptoms that just ultimately lead to total organ shutdown and death. So, I mean, the way to destroy a nation, I mean, if you were a terrorist, you couldn't come up with a better plan of how to destroy a nation than take away its healthy supplements. I mean,
but the FDA could very easily kill up to a million people a year by denying them the therapies that are working and promoting therapies that you and I both know do not work and actually exacerbate or cause death. But only in America could you kill a million people with malice aforethought and be commended by industries and legislators for doing it. So it's time that this entire sorry story, that we bring our story to the American public and force a debate on the issue in the open, because they'll lose every debate. They always do.
Yes.
I debated the commissioner of the FDA, and the man sounded like a complete idiot.
We will
keep on this, Mike, and this will be a major issue.
Well, it's crucial, and you're right. If this is publicly debated, we, that is the proponents of health freedom, we will win. And it's important to note that our position, and I know you agree with this, Gary, is that we don't want to restrict other people's choice if they choose to take a pharmaceutical, or if they choose chemotherapy, we might feel like that's a bad choice, but we're not going to force them at gunpoint, let's say, to give up their medicine and force them to take our medicine. We believe in freedom of choice. Each person should be allowed to make the choice of whatever system they think is going to serve them best. And that is very different from the FDA's position, which is that you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. You are forced to take the only medicine that we have made into a monopoly and that we are going to literally force down your throats, sometimes at gunpoint, and I mean that when it comes to parents with teenagers who have been diagnosed with cancer and they say, I don't want my child to undergo chemotherapy, and they are arrested, they are forced at gunpoint. Abraham Cherix was a documented case of this happening, forced literally at gunpoint to be injected with chemotherapeutic chemicals, mother threatened with arrest for trying to take a child away from that system. I mean, this is happening in America today, and you have to wonder, how bad is their medicine if they have to make you take it at gunpoint? I mean, how bad is it? You know, in our industry, Gary, no one has to be forced to take a superfood, to take an extract, to take an herb. They want to take those things because they work, because they get the benefits. They experience the results, and they know it's safe, they know it's affordable, they know it's effective. That is a system of medicine that can help give us a stronger future.
We will be back in touch. Look forward to our next conversation with you, Mike.
Thank you, Gary. Pleasure to join you today.
Mike Adams, naturalnews.com. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. And TomDispatch.com. I'm very concerned. I know many people in this audience are concerned about rising food prices. Though if you were to walk up the Upper West Side, where my office is and studio, you would frequently see people packed into restaurants, vegetable stands outside loaded with every imaginable type of food, and rarely people really paying attention to the price. So my question then is, what can a humble loaf of bread tell us about the world? The answer is far more than what you might imagine. For one thing, that loaf of bread can be read as if it were a core sample extractor from the heart of a grim global economy. Looked at another way, it reveals some of the crucial fault lines of world politics, including the origins of the Arab Spring that has now become a summer of discontent. Consider this. Between June of 2010 and June of 2011, world grain prices almost doubled. In many places on this planet, that proved an unmitigated catastrophe. In those same months, several governments fell. Rioting broke out in cities across the world, Nairobi and in Kenya. And most disturbingly, three new wars began in Libya, Yemen, and Syria. Even on Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, Bedouin tribes are now in revolt against the country's interim government and manning their own armed barricades. And in each of these situations, the initial trouble was traceable, at least in part, to the price of that loaf of bread. If these upheavals were not resource conflicts in the formal sense of the term, think of them at least as bread-triggered upheavals. Bread has classically been known as the staff of life. In much of the world, you can't get more basic, since that daily loaf of bread often stands between the mass of humanity and starvation. Still, to read present world politics from the loaf of bread, you first have to ask, of what exactly is that loaf made? Water, salt, yeast, and of course, but not always, wheat. Which means when wheat prices increase globally, so does the price of that loaf, and so does trouble. To imagine that there's nothing else in bread, however, is to misunderstand modern global agriculture. Another key ingredient in our loaf, call it the factor of production, is petroleum. Yes, crude oil, which appears in our bread as fertilizer and tractor fuel. Without it, wheat couldn't be produced and processed or moved across continents and oceans. And don't forget labor. It's an ingredient in our loaf, too, but not perhaps in the way you might imagine. After all, mechanization has largely displaced workers from the field to the factory. Instead of untold thousands of peasants planting and harvesting wheat by hand, industrial workers now make tractors and threshers, produce fuel and chemical pesticides and nitrogen fertilizers, all rendered from petroleum and all crucial to modern wheat growing. If the labor power of those workers is transferred to the wheat field, it happens in the form of technology. Today, one person driving a huge $400,000 combine, burning 200 gallons of fuel a day, guided by computers and GPS satellite navigation, can cover 20 acres an hour and harvest up to 9,000 bushels of wheat in a single day. Next, without financial capital, meaning money, our loaf of bread wouldn't exist. It's necessary to purchase the oil, the fertilizer, that combine, and so on. But financial capital may indirectly affect the price of our loaf even more powerfully. When there is too much liquid capital moving through the global financial system, speculators start to bid up the price of various assets, including all the ingredients in bread. This sort of speculation naturally contributes to the rising fuel and grain prices. The final ingredient comes from nature: sunlight, oxygen, water, and nutritious soil, all in just the correct amounts and just the right time. There's one more input that can't be ignored. A different kind of contribution from nature. Climate change, just now really kicking in and increasingly the key destabilizing element in bringing that loaf of bread disastrously to market. When these ingredients mix in a way that sends the price of bread soaring, politics enters the picture. Consider this, for instance. The upheavals in Egypt lay at the heart of the Arab Spring. Egypt is also the world's single largest wheat importer, followed closely by Algeria and Morocco. Keep in mind as well that the Arab Spring uprising started in Tunisia when rising food prices, high unemployment, and a widening gap between rich and poor triggered deadly riots, and finally the flight of the country's autocratic ruler, Zine Ben Ali. His last act was a vow to reduce the price of sugar, meat, milk, and bread, but it was too little and too late. With that, protests began in Egypt, and the Algerian government ordered increased wheat imports to stave off growing unrest over food prices. As global wheat prices surged by 70% between June and December 2010, bread consumption in Egypt started to decline under what economists called price rationing. And that price kept rising all through the spring of 2011. By June, wheat cost 83% more than it did a year before. And during that same time frame, corn prices surged by 91%. Egypt is the world's fourth largest corn importer. When not used to make bread, corn is often employed as a food additive and to feed poultry and livestock. Algeria, Syria, Morocco, and Saudi Arabia are among the top 15 corn importers. As those wheat and corn prices surged, it was not just the standard of living of the Egyptian poor that was threatened, but their very lives as climate change-driven food prices triggered political violence. In Egypt, food is a volatile political issue. After all, one in five Egyptians live on less than $1 a day. And the government provides subsidized bread to 14 million people out of a population of 83 million. Last year, overall food price inflation in Egypt was running at more than 20%. This had an instant and devastating impact on Egyptian families, who spent an average of 40% of their often exceedingly meager monthly income simply feeding themselves. Against this backdrop, the World Bank president, Robert Zoellick, fretted that the global food system was, quote, one shock away from full-fledged crisis. And if you want to trace that near full-fledged crisis back to its environmental roots, the place to look is climate change, the increasingly extreme and devastating weather being experienced across the planet. When it comes to bread, it went like this. In the summer of 2010, Russia, one of the world's leading wheat exporters, suffered its worst drought in 100 years. Known as the Black Sea Drought, this extreme weather triggered fires that burnt down vast swaths of the Russian forest, bleached farmlands, and damaged the country's breadbasket wheat crop so badly that its leaders, urged by Western grain speculators, imposed a year-long ban on wheat exports. As Russia is among the top four wheat exporters in a year, that caused the prices to surge upwards. At the same time, massive flooding occurred in Australia, another significant wheat exporter, while excessive rains in the American Midwest and Canada damaged corn production. Freakishly massive flooding in Pakistan, which put 20% of the country underwater, also adversely affected the markets and spurred speculators. And that's when these climate-driven prices began to soar in Egypt. The ensuing crisis, triggered in part by that rise in the price of our loaf of bread, led to upheaval and finally the fall of the country's reigning autocratic, Hosni Mubarak. Tunisia and Egypt helped trigger a crisis that led to the incipient civil war, then Western intervention in neighboring Libya, which meant most of that country's production of 1.4 million barrels of oil a day went offline. That, in turn, caused the price of crude oil to surge at its height to $125 a barrel, which set off yet more speculation in food markets, further driving up the price of grains. And recent months haven't brought much relief. Once again, significant, in some cases, record flooding has damaged crops in Canada, the United States, and Australia. Meanwhile, an unexpected spring drought in Northern Europe has hurt grain crops as well. The global food system is visibly straining, if not snapping, under the intense pressure of rising demand, rising energy prices, growing water shortages, and most of all, the onset of climate chaos. And this, the experts tell us, is only the beginning. the price of our loaf of bread is forecast to increase by up to 90%. That will mean yet more upheavals, more protests, greater desperation, heightened conflicts over water, increased migration, roiling ethnic and religious violence, banditry, civil war, and a past history as any judge, possibly a raft of new interventions by imperial and possibly regional powers. And how are we responding to this gathering crisis? Has there been a broad new international initiative focused on ensuring food security for the global poor? That is to say, a stable, affordable price for a loaf of bread? No. Instead, massive corporations like Glencore, the world's largest commodity trading company, and the privately held and secretive Cargill, the world's largest trader of agriculture commodities, are moving to further consolidate their control of world grain markets and vertically integrate their global supply chains in a new form of food imperialism designed to profit off global misery. And while bread triggered war and revolution in the Middle East, Glencore made windfall profits on the surge in grain prices. And the more expansive our war efforts, the more expensive our loaves of bread become. And the more money firms like Glencore and Cargill stand to make, consider that just about the worst possible form of adaptation is to the climate crisis. So what text should flash through our brains when reading our loaf of bread? A warning, obviously, but so far it seems a warning ignored. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go into our studio in New York City and say hello. I see we have Pat Duncanson standing by. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Gary. It's so good to talk with you again. Today, Gary, we have an enthusiastic lady here from our wellness corner at 89th and Broadway. Her name is Rhoda Wilson, and she's now enjoying a much better quality of life thanks to you and the programs that you allow us to continue to offer the public there.
Rhoda,
hi, Rhoda. Say hello to Gary.
Hi, Gary.
What condition did you have?
Well, first of all, Gary, I was addicted to caffeine and sugar. I totally eliminated the sugar and caffeine from my diet, and I'm happy to say I have more energy, I feel much better, and I've lost 13 pounds in 8 weeks.
Good. Did you have any other defined illnesses?
Well, my blood pressure was constantly rising. It was 130 over 90, and it went down to 110 over 70.
How about your blood sugar?
Well, that wasn't really a problem. I'm not a diabetic. But I did have eczema. I'm sorry. And I had dark circles around my eyes.
For how long?
For many years, Gary. And I found out it was due to allergies, food allergies.
And how are those circles and that eczema today?
The eczema is completely gone. There are no signs of it. My skin is clear, and the circles have ceased.
Well, nice to know that. Thank you. We're a little tight on time here, so Pat Duncanson, who I say anytime you got someone who's interesting that you've helped, let me know, and she did. And Pat, by the way, counsels people. She has a master's degree, as all the people I hire do, in clinical nutrition. They're dietitians, clinicians, and they give free counseling because I can't counsel everyone, so I just hired a group of highly qualified, very good people who follow my protocols, who counsel people for free. It's a public service. So, Pat, thank you for helping this woman. That's about the fifth in the 5,000s now that Pat has helped. You can reach Pat at 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you, Gary.
And let's go in studio and say hello to, I believe we have Elizabeth and Jason in studio. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary.
By the way, you're from England, and you know that Rupert Murdoch, who's actually Australian, was there yesterday with his son testifying, right?
Yes.
Well, here's the latest on this.
Right.
This is, quote, London, the board's report. Speaking before a British Parliament inquiry today, media titans Rupert and James Murdoch vowed to launch, quote, a complete and full investigation to determine who is running the company they are in charge of. Quote, someone has been running News Corp, and as God is my witness, I'm going to find out who it is, thundered the senior Murdoch, quote, I will use SEAL Team 6 if need be. Quote, right now we're trying to figure out who's running the company by process of elimination, he added. So far, the only two people we've eliminated who are not running the company are my son and myself.
Right.
Mr. Murdoch's son, James, seemed equally in the dark about some basic matters, including his own place of birth, as well as his first and last name. At one point, when a member of parliament pointed at him and says, who is the man sitting beside you? The younger Mr. Murdoch looked and says, I've never seen this elderly gentleman in my life. And that was his father. There was a poignant moment in the proceedings when the senior Murdoch described the emotional toll the News Corporation scandal has taken on him. He said, people have been saying such terrible things about me. I'm absolutely going to stop listening to their secret mail conversations. At one point, towards the end of the hearing, an uninvited man lunged forward towards Mr. Rupert Murdoch, causing Mr. Murdoch to exclaim, police, catch that man. He might be the man who's running News Corporation. Today, the inquiry was historic because it marked the first time that British politicians have spoken to Rupert Murdoch while not on board his yacht.
Yes, absolutely, totally agree. Exactly. Well, something else is happening, of course. Hillary Clinton is in Greece, and the New York Times says that Clinton has praised Greece for tackling the debt. But how, as a progressive, could you please tell us how a progressive would look at this same story?
I read the New York Times that said in Athens, Clinton praises Greece for tackling its debt. First, keep this in perspective. Greece is right now a little over 165% debt to gross domestic product. That means for every dollar it receives from taxes or any source, it owes $1.65. Now, the trouble is, and this is the big concern as a progressive, I'm looking for solutions first to the problem. The problem is that the corrupt government of Greece and its politicians and its generals spent money, lied about the nature of their debt, allowed a lot of wealthy people not to pay taxes, loaded up a lot of no-work positions so they could buy the voters, a lot of politicians do in the United States with different unions. And then, when the truth of the matter started to come out, they hired Goldman Sachs, paid them $400 million to do an Enron type of cover-up. That worked for a couple years, then that was blown. So now, the International Monetary Fund, in my opinion, a completely criminal and corrupt organization, along with the European Central Bank, and speculators like Goldman Sachs, have given Greece money at very high interest rates and compounded and said every nickel you get now doesn't go for your free education, that's gone. Doesn't go for your free health care, that's gone. Doesn't go for children's programs, children's food programs in schools. No, we're not giving that anymore. You have to sell off all your monuments and your assets and your shipping lanes and your docks and your water and your electric. Your whole country now is on an auction block, and every piece will be sold to our member corporations. Then every nickel comes in, you must give it back to us. And so the Greek corrupt government, and that's redundant, has said yes. And Hillary Clinton is extremely supportive of that, as we would expect, as her husband was when he helped with the founding of the World Trade Organization and GATT NAFTA and betrayed the working class people. Now, how long do you think it's going to take when people get a 20% cut in their pensions, in their salaries, with massive unemployment, up to 35% in younger people, and now they are giving all that money to bankers, the people who caused the problem, speculators. First, there will be riots by the youth. Then there will be general strikes by the rest of the population. Then there will be civil unrest. And then there will be anarchy. And then the government will be taken out of power. And then the debt will be canceled, as was done in Argentina. Then they'll go off the euro. Then they'll stabilize. And they'll rebuild themselves. Then with this, I believe a chain reaction will occur. Then it will go from Greece to Ireland, that is even more in debt, to Spain, that is five times more in debt, Portugal, and then Italy. and hence that way in the European Union, all because of unmitigated greed and the sponsors, the Bilderbergs, the Council on Foreign Relations, the so-called best and brightest, who think they know more about life yet never have to be in the shoes of a person who is suffering, never have to be hungry, never have to see their children go to school without food in their belly, never have to worry about the marshals coming to their house to tell them, you're out of here, where am I going to go? We don't care, just get out of the house or we'll arrest you. They never have to be in that position. And as a result, there is no empathy, there's no compassion, there's only unmitigated greed. And why is it that the New York Times missed that part of the story? That's the difference between liberals and good card-carrying Democrats and those of us who are still capable of independent, humanistic, and spiritual thought.
Right, thank you very much. And we're on to a very relevant question today to this show. At what point would a person go from a normal life where they're just working for their own comforts, their own security, to actually making something happen, where they take a risk and they say, you know, tied into the Mike Adams earlier, they're not going to take it anymore. They're going to stand up. What is it that is going to take a person from that place to an active?
Mm. Are you familiar with the philosopher Hermann Hesse?
No, actually. No.
He said, there is no reality except the one contained within us. That is why so many people live such an unreal life. They take the images outside them for reality and never allow the world within to assert itself. So as long as we place our reality in the hands of people, institutions that are rigidified ideologues, left and right, the good Democrat, the good Republican, the good liberal, the good conservative, then there is no truth except the truth which is officially given to us by the official policymakers at the top and the official spokespersons who speak on behalf of the policymakers. Those are the people who tell us what to buy, what to eat, where to live, how to vote, what to vote on, what the issue should be. You have Keith Urban, the good liberal, and Rachel Maddow, the good liberal, but not in any way advancing anything that will help free us and change the world in a better way. And then on the other side, you have Sean Hannity, the good conservative. And then you have Laura Ingraham, the good conservative. So what you have is you have a series of scorpions in a cocktail glass, each immune to the other's venom, and therefore in a virtual endless war of words. And all the while, we become spectators to this circus without looking at the fact that we are not living sustainable, authentic lives. It is when you become free of these dogmas and you're able to see the strengths and weaknesses of your former position, you're able to keep what works and let go of what doesn't. And therefore, you become truly caring about everyone's future, not just your tribe, your guild, your sorority, your union. You care about the world. You care about fairness and morals and ethics and decency. That is simply non-existent now on the left and right. As an ideology. It exists in the independents and those who serve peace and who are willing to commit themselves. But to commit yourself to being independent, you also have to commit yourself to a risk. A risk where you may lose something. You may lose your position. You may lose your authority. If you're a doctor and you decide that the drugs you're giving are killing or injuring your patient instead of helping them like Vioxx, but if you chose an alternative way that could heal, you would be warned, threatened, and thrown out because it's not official medicine. And as long as you practice official medicine, and the New York Times promotes official journalism, and Fox is officially conservative, and MSNBC is officially liberal, then you are allowed to fail without being criticized or without major changes. But then someone who was conservative or was liberal, who decides that the answers they need in order to see real change don't lie within the existing paradigm, they're excluded from it. They never allow in any official institution, they never allow the virus to contaminate the rest of the mindset, and hence you're thrown out. You become, quote, the controversial. Using terms and names, they will exclude you from being interviewed as a fair-minded person. You're then radicalized. If you're on the left, when Birrarelli says, oh, those extreme leftists, what he's really saying is people who are looking for the truth and looking at it without the eye of the ideology, therefore seeing the truth. Suddenly you're far left. On the far right, they'll do the same thing. Oh, you're one of those people who believe in the Constitution, but you're too radical, man. No. That person believes that habeas corpus should be maintained. It believes that a person should have the right to live in peace in their home. But suddenly that's radical. That's extreme. So now truth becomes extreme. Solutions to our problems become way too extreme. And hence, the only people who are then spoken with, given a forum, given an opportunity to share their points of view, are people who accept the codification of one truth, the official Marxist, the official liberal, the official conservative, the official medical, the official financial. Wall Street sees things this way because it's official. Well, these experts, did any of these economists, did any of the Fed people, did any of the Treasury secretaries see our crisis coming, the bubbles occurring? If they did, why didn't they warn us? Because you don't go against what is official. And then we have the official middle class. Do you remember I said recently, don't look for the upper middle class to ever rebel? It will never rebel. Or the professional class, lawyers, engineers, accountants, physicians, nurses, architects, they will never rebel?
Yes.
I said, don't look at the middle class, they're not going to rebel. Don't look at the wealthy, they've never rebelled and never will.
Yeah. But
don't look at the poor will not rebel. But the working poor will. And that's about 65 million armed people. And they're under the radar, and no one's paying attention because they're virtually without advocates. They have no advocates. They have no power. But they're thermitic. They're literally at the explosive level. So where multiple segments of our society are fully ensconced in the comfort and certainty of absolute believers in the orthodoxy of those who control them, that they don't have to do anything more than, it's handled. You know, Bill O'Reilly's our man. He's going to handle it. So I'll go ahead and watch these television programs and I'll eat these foods. And yeah, my kid's got diabetes and the ADD, but it surely can't have anything to do with what I'm doing. They live in complete denial. The people watch Oprah, and you've heard me say this many times. I won't go on Oprah. I refuse to. Because I consider her a Glenn Beckett, and I consider her no better than people who follow Deepak or Tony Robbins or the other people. When you seek your truth outside of yourself, you are a fool. And you will never find the truth outside of yourself, ever. And yet we're constantly looking outside of ourselves. And who's the newest guru? Where's the newest truth? What's the newest passionate novel? What's the secret? The new secret? Got to go see it. Down the rabbit hole. Got to go see it. Oh, did you hear about such and such? Got to run out to Arizona. There's a new comet festival. Got to go. And nothing changes because the journey is not an inward journey. It's too uncomfortable. So they take the journey that is the easiest, least painful to take. Adapt to the ever-changing landscape, but always in the same paradigm. It's like moving the furniture in your prison around 1,000 times. You're still a prisoner. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Gary Noll. Thank you very much for listening today. We hope we've shared some insights into issues that allow you a chance to think in ways that otherwise you wouldn't. I can promise you none of the things we talk about will any of the other left or right media talk about, because we are not ever going to look at a problem through the mindset of a conditioned psyche. Back in a moment.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.
I'm trying to show how much I love.